Here at the Sociology of Everything podcast, we acknowledge the people of Ganayarta, whose land this episode was mainly produced on, and whose past and present elders we pay our respects to. Hi, I'm Eric Hsu.
And I'm Louis Everest.
And we're Lou and the Sioux, and this is the Sociology of Everything podcast, brought to you by UniSA, the university where we're not students but actually employed as staff.
Yeah. We're not actually students.
Yeah.
We're employed as staff.
Yeah. Because, Louis, I'm not sure if you remember, but we actually got you got a message.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
From a listener.
Yeah.
Who said they really liked the podcast, and it was so great to hear that students at UniSA were so invested and interested in promoting sociology.
Yeah. It was the best unintentional backhanded compliment I've ever received. It was like, you guys are so good for students.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's two ways to really interpret
it. This is actually my profession.
Right? On the one hand, they could just think that our treatment of the concepts we're looking at in this podcast is very sophomoric.
Mm.
It's just like, this must have been produced by students because there's no way these people are employed in a professional capacity. But see, I choose to read it a different way.
Mm.
That we sound youthful, that we are able to speak in the vernacular of students, and I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Except having interacted with students on a regular basis as the semester just started, I don't know if we do speak in the vernacular of students.
We do, Louis. We do. We clearly do. According to one listener.
That. Yeah. Thank you to that listener. You're wonderful.
Now, Louis, we are now in season 3 of the podcast. It's been quite a long while since we recorded and released our last episode.
Mm.
What have you done in that time?
Oh, God, not a great deal. We've had the kind of summer and festive period. It's been pretty mild in Adelaide. Fair amount of work, really, which, you know.
And that work involved the production of a book.
Yes, that's true. I have submitted my first manuscript to the publisher. It's in the production process. I think that we'll probably do a pretty scandalous self-promotion exercise and run a podcast in our own writing at some point. So I'll definitely wait for it to be on sale in bookstores or online prior
now,
to that.
Louis, tell us about that experience of writing that manuscript. Did you feel like it was something you wanted to do, or did it kind of, in the end, start to feel a bit tedious?
I think definitely there's a bit of a trajectory with writing an academic text where it's very, very exciting at the start, and then towards the end it does grind you down a little bit. But then I know this may not help our transition into today's episode, but there's still a lot of excitement, I think, towards the end.
So there wasn't very much estrangement from the process of writing this book. And that actually leads us to the concept we're going to look at in this episode, Marx's concept of alienation.
Mm.
We've looked at the work of Marx in a previous episode, namely the Communist Manifesto. But in this episode, we're going to take a look at a different facet of his work, which is the idea of alienation. Roughly put, Louis, what is alienation?
So alienation is the process of something becoming alien, which is essentially something becoming foreign, different, separate from who we are.
Yeah.
And so we can think about in society sometimes when a government might demonize a population and represent them as being other and different and scary and foreign, you could say that government's trying to alienate that group.
And I should also mention here that there are some translations of the term alienation that refer to it as a type of estrangement. So some translations of Marx's work refer to his idea of alienation as estrangement, but they more or less are trying to get at the same thing.
Yeah, that process whereby something is becoming different, separate, and almost a little bit threatening or scary, I'd say as well. It's not just like it's no longer part of us or part of a group or part of something. It's actually in some ways a little dangerous, maybe.
So why does Marx think that alienation is a really insightful way to understand the system of capitalism?
Well, Marx argues that capitalism, the structure of capitalism, creates forms of alienation. And in the text we're talking about today, we're looking specifically at work, at labour. And he says, inside the capitalist structure, the process of work becomes something that's alienating for people. We'll go through the different ways he describes that. But one thing I'd like to add is I love this reading because so often for students, when you're looking at the Communist Manifesto, you're looking at a discussion when Marx criticizes a whole structure of capitalism, it's kind of sometimes hard to picture yourself in that story and think, how am I being exploited? But the descriptions in this text, when he speaks about how work is alienating for us, you just see that light bulb moment for students when they realize that maybe this is their experience.
Yeah. So there's something very tangible, something very concrete about Marx's analysis here. And I should also mention that this analysis is drawn from a part of a text that actually wasn't released when he was alive. Mm. It was released in a posthumously published work called The Economic and Philosophical Manuscripts of 1844. Which isn't the best title, let's be honest.
No.
Right? It's not the best title.
No. By the way, shout out to my dad because I told him that I was reading this a while back and he said, what book's that actually from? What text actually from? And I couldn't think of it. And he shamed me. And he said, I think it's from that. And I'm like, oh, okay, whatever.
Yeah, exciting stuff. Louis, is that the name of your book?
It is not. No, to be revealed in a future episode.
So let's just get stuck into it, you know? Mm. If we dive headfirst into Marx's theory of alienation, we come across the first form of alienation. What does that refer to?
So the first form of alienation is the alienation of workers from the products of their labor. Now, in the most simplistic sense, what Marx is referring to here is the fact that because workers don't work for themselves,
yeah,
they work as part of someone else's business,
yeah,
they don't own and control the things they produce.
That's right.
So they can spend all their time slaving away on something and creating something, and when that thing has been created, it's then taken off them,
yeah,
and it's sold so someone else can make profit.
So let's pretend that we're working in a factory that produces clothes.
Mm-hmm.
We're producing t-shirts in this case,
mm,
and I like do the sewing and you do like the stenciling. When we produce these t-shirts, do we get to keep them?
No.
We don't,
no,
right?
No.
And so it's literally taken off of us, but it goes even deeper. There's another layer to this argument that Marx puts forth, which is that the production process in capitalist societies can get so complex that we may not even see ourselves, our labor, as contributing to the end result. So it's not only taken away from us, the end product, but when it reappears to us, it may appear to us in alien form.
Mm.
So the example that oftentimes that's given is the production of chocolate. There are some cocoa producers who have never come across chocolate before.
Mm.
Right. And you can watch these videos on YouTube where, you know, a cocoa farmer is for the first time given the product of their labor.
Mm.
And their mind is blown. And so that really hits at one aspect of his argument here.
Hmm. And there'd be all sorts of consumer electronics and high value items that are made in factories where people wouldn't be able to afford the very products they're making.
Yeah.
That would be a pretty common scenario.
And the more that these products are made, in some respects, the more the worker is exploited.
Mm.
Okay? So like usually if you were engaging in non-alienated labor, and we'll talk about what that is later on, you wouldn't think of that thing being responsible for your exploitation, your working conditions becoming more precarious.
Mm.
But that's what happens when we're producing these t-shirts, presumably, in a capitalist factory.
Mm.
We're producing them. Profit is being generated by our labor.
Mm.
But then, according to Marx, that profit is used to make our lives more precarious, more difficult. Mm.
So he's really describing a relationship that's developing between the worker and the thing they're producing.
Yeah.
Their labor, I mean, ideally, the worker would do so in a kind of creative and fulfilling fashion.
Yeah,
obviously,
100%.
That's not happening here. And then they create this object which ideally should feel like a part of themselves, but that's not happening here. And then that object's taken away and it sort of stands opposed to them. It's been alienated from them.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of an object of threat because it's part of this structure that's holding them in a kind of an unfulfilling existence.
Yeah. And so you can see there's many different layers to this argument. And another facet of this argument is that there's also a type of alienation that's experienced by the worker in the act of production itself. What does that refer to?
Well, that refers to the fact that, once again, in an ideal sense, workers should have some degree of agency and control over what they do at work.
Yeah.
They should be able to choose how to spend their time, what they're going to produce, what they're going to work on.
Yeah.
But within this capitalist system, the worker has no control over what they do.
Yeah.
I can't come to work and decide that I'm going to do something different from my normal role. And I have a lot more agency and power than people who do work, say, in a factory where they have to go in and do the same repetitive thing day after day. And that's what Marx was referring to here. It's the alienation of the worker from the actual production process or from the act of work.
Yeah, this is when work becomes just a way to sustain yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So when Marx was writing, he was seeing all these transformations happening around the world, and he was seeing people have to take forms of work they wouldn't normally otherwise do, and just for the sake of survival.
Mm.
So when we just work for survival, that leads us to have a very unique relationship to labor, to producing things. We see it as something we wouldn't otherwise do. It's just, you know, when someone ever says like, oh, it's just my job, I do it to put food on the table.
Yeah.
That's what Marx is talking about here.
Yeah. Yeah. Effectively, labor becomes the same as eating or doing anything else. You just need to sustain yourself and stay alive, as opposed to something you do to express your creativity, to produce things, something that is really fulfilling. There's a great quote here that he talks about when he discusses this alienation of the work in the work process. And that's first, the fact that labor is external to the worker, i.e. it does not belong to his essential being, that in his work, therefore, he does not affirm himself but denies himself, does not feel content but unhappy, does not develop freely his physical and mental energy but mortifies his body and ruins his mind. The worker, therefore, only feels himself outside his work and his work feels outside himself.
So, pretty depressing, though.
So depressing. So depressing. But it's amazing because in that quote, Marx is describing the fact that when the worker completely loses control and agency over what they do at work, work just becomes this degrading, kind of horrible process. And interestingly, the quote sort of makes me feel about how people then start to try and express themselves outside of work. When you can take up a hobby, you can paint or you can whittle bits of wood. I don't know what you do to kind of create and do kind of more productive forms of labor.
Marx is kind of like emo, isn't he?
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
And this prompts us to talk about the third form of alienation that Marx identifies, which is the alienation from our species being. That sounds so abstract. What is he trying to get at here?
Well, if you thought he was emo and dark before, I feel like this is where it comes home to roost. Because what Marx is saying here is that labor and work, the way it should be, is a sort of essential part of being a human being.
Yeah.
Being able to actively create things, work on your environment to produce things in novel and interesting ways is a core part of what separates humans from animals. Animals just labor or work because of direct physical need. They might hunt because they're hungry, whereas humans do things like create different cuisines and foods that aren't about sustenance. Yeah. They're about being creative and interesting, and that's what separates us from animals. But as more and more of our labor and work is just oriented towards money because we need money to survive, then there's no difference between going to work and hunting. It just becomes about survival. We don't do this creative, important process. And because of that, the unique activity that separated us, that was part of our species being, part of what made us unique, is disappearing. And we're just sustaining ourselves in the rat race.
So Marx is actually trying to say something quite profound here.
Yeah.
He's actually trying to say something about what it means to be human.
Yes.
Right? Which is a really big question to try to answer.
Yeah.
And you know, I think there's something really insightful that he's trying to get at when he says that humans aren't the only animal to produce things in the world.
Yeah.
Like a spider produces spider webs. I'm not sure on a daily basis. I don't know how often they produce spider webs. But they produce spider webs, right?
Yeah.
But what's different about us and a spider is that a spider doesn't think about, doesn't consciously reflect on the thing they want to produce.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be great if they did, though. You know what I mean?
Haven't you ever read Charlotte's Web?
Yeah, well, yeah, but Charlotte's Web not going to be like, you know, instead of producing this spider web, I'm going to produce the latest version of the iPhone.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But humans can, right? Humans don't have to just produce things through instinct.
Yeah, or for need. Marx yeah. talks about production not just being about physical need, but work is about physical need.
Yeah.
If I didn't need money for food and my mortgage and everything else, would I come into work tomorrow? I'm not sure. I'd probably stay at home and do something creative and interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say this aspect of Marx's work is really important and profound because it's getting us to think about, like, what would our ideal work situation look like?
Yes.
If we didn't have to work to survive, what would we do?
Mm. Once again, I think you can think about looking at people's hobbies. What do people do when they're not just acting out of need, when they have free choice over their labors and their pursuits?
Yeah.
My uncle-in-law, for instance, is one of those people who has heaps of hobbies. Yeah.
What does he do?
Okay, so he does archery, he does karate, he has bonsais, he lives in London, he's building ships and he's taken up oil painting and he's doing all these things in retirement, right?
Yeah.
He's had a lot of these hobbies for a while, but since retiring, he's now had the time for all these creative pursuits. And that's the type of labor that Marx is referring to. Yeah. The feeling that he would get from producing all these different things, bonsais, ships, paintings, I bet he never had that feeling when he was grinding away for a pay packet in his job.
Get him on the line, Louis. No, we're not. We're not. And I think, you know, this actually also prompts us to talk about the fourth type of alienation that Marx identifies, which is the alienation from one another. And I think this actually leads us to a segment we like to call Say What? Where we look at a quote in need of further explanation. Louis, you have one for us.
I do. Here we go. In fact, the proposition that man's species nature is estranged from him means that one man is estranged from the other, as each of them is from man's essential nature. The estrangement of man, and in fact every relationship in which man stands to himself, is first realized and expressed in the relationship in which a man stands to other men.
Now, if we set aside the highly gendered language that's being used.
A lot of men. It could be a traditional white power rally or something, isn't it? It could come straight from the Proud Boys, that one.
But if we set that to one side and just replace man with person.
Yes.
What he's suggesting here is that something weird happens to how we relate to one another, how we see one another, how we view one another.
Mm.
In an ideal world, according to Marx, we would see each other as being allies, as being able to work towards the same goal, of having collective endeavors and pursuits. But we don't view each other in that way in a capitalist economy. The workers view each other as competition, as people they need to beat in some sort of game or some sort of race that they're forced to engage in.
And it's fascinating. If we go back to the term alienation and we think about all these forms of alienation, it's this constant process of things being othered and made foreign to ourselves, the products of our labor itself of what we do while we're at work. We're becoming foreign to ourselves as we don't even recognize ourselves as humans anymore because we're just cogs in a machine. And now fellow workers, fellow human beings seem strange and foreign and different. Yeah. They're being alienated too because we just see them as labor power and, like you said, competition in the workforce. And I always think when I get to this point in this reading that it also ties back into the Communist Manifesto a little bit.
Yeah.
Because if you think about the purpose of that document, it's about creating class consciousness. It's about getting workers to see that they're in the same system, that they're part of the proletariat, the same class. And this is one way that capitalism kind of stops that happening. By alienating people from one another, it stops people developing a class consciousness. It's such a damaging part of capitalism.
So you can see why this text has such resonance in the contemporary era, right? Like if you've ever felt isolated, if ever you felt really disconnected from your life or what you're doing, then Marx has an answer for you. It's because of capitalism, right? This is an objective reality that capitalism relies on. And you might think, oh, this is just my own subjective experience and this is just who I am. Marx would say, no, you're being made to feel this way. This is an integral part of the system. And so if we want to address this issue, if we want to address these feelings and experiences, well, then we need to have structural changes.
That's exactly right. However, I would say that one thing about this reading is that maybe for the listeners, this doesn't reflect their experience of work and capitalism.
Right. Yeah. Not everyone's.
No, that's right. And I can think about friends of mine. I have a friend who lives in Melbourne who's an avid listener, so shout out to him. I describe him as a super fan.
He's a fan. That's great.
And he runs like his own woodworking workshop where he has control over a lot of what he does.
Yeah.
It's a very creative process. He kind of picks his clients. His partner's an artist and they work on joint projects together. I'm not sure how much of this text describes what he does.
Louis, if you didn't have to work for money, what would you do?
That's such a good question. I have no idea. Look, I could say something noble now and make myself sound good, but I'd probably play a lot of video games. Travel. Travel and play video games. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, when you go around the world, you go, Louis, what do you do? And you're like, oh, yeah, I play video games. And,
yeah.
You know?
Travel
and stuff.
Have fun. Yeah.
Have fun.
Ride my bike a lot.
Oh, no, God. Louis, not what you should be saying. You should be saying doing this podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Which we're in this third season of now.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been months between episodes.
Well, it's because you were doing Alienated Live Arms of Laban.
Yeah,
right?
That's exactly right.
Right?
Yeah,
so now we feel free.
Yeah, this we've got like an hour of freedom to record this and then it's back to the alienating grind.
Well, on that note, thanks very much for listening. We'll catch you in the next episode.
Thank you.
The Sociology of Everything podcast is created and hosted by Eric Hsu and Louis Evers. It's produced and edited by Eric Hsu. To learn more about studying sociology and other exciting programs online or in person at the University of South Australia, visit unisa.edu.au where you can search for more details. The Sociology of Everything podcast is primarily produced on the lands of the Kaurna people. The hosts of the podcast would like to pay their respects to elders past, present, and emerging. The opinions expressed in the Sociology of Everything podcast are that of the hosts and guest speakers. They do not necessarily reflect the opinions of anyone at UniSA or the institution at large. If you'd like to get in touch or learn more about the podcast, then visit our website at sociologypodcast.com. Thanks for listening.